We can go to the police. I'll help you. You shouldn't have to just accept that this happened and suffer for it. What am I going to do? Have Jules arrested? Yes. Her voice bursts out of the speaker, and Abigail's shithead boyfriend, or ex, I guess, based on the screaming coming from her room last night. What those two did is a crime, Taylor. It would make them sex offenders in some places. I don't know. Cops mean statements. Sitting in a room with a dude staring at my tits while I recount my humiliation for him. Or worse, a morally righteous woman who tells me this wouldn't have happened if there wasn't a video, if I hadn't put myself in that situation. Screw that. If it were me, I'd be slitting throats. It's not you. I appreciate Sasha's venom. It's what I love about her. She's everything I'm not. Vengeful and confident. I'm not built that way. I know you're trying. Thank you. But I still need time to think. I'm not there yet. Truth is, I've barely wrapped my head around the idea that this is happening, much less the larger implications. When my alarm went off yesterday morning for class, a fierce and immediate sense of panic erupted through my muscles. I felt sick at the thought of walking across campus to the lingering eyes and hushed conversations, heads turning when I entered the room, classmates with their phones in their laps, the video playing, giggles and stares. I couldn't do it. So I stayed home. On one of my TV breaks, I even texted Rebecca. I don't know why, I guess to share in the misery together. She didn't respond, which is probably for the best. Maybe if we just ignore this and each other, it'll just go away.
Have you heard from Connor?
Her voice is apprehensive, as if she's concerned I might hang up on her for daring to ask. I almost do, because just the sound of his name sends a knife of pain to my heart. He's texted a few times, but I'm ignoring the messages.
Taylor?
What? It's over, I mutter. You were there when I dumped him.
Yes, I was. And it was obvious you weren't thinking clearly, she says in aggravation. You did everything you could to push him away.
I get it, okay? When we're in that level of crisis, we fall back on our worst insecurities. You were worried he'd judge you or feel embarrassed on your behalf. I don't need a psychology lesson right now, I interrupt. Please, just leave it alone. There's a short beat of silence.
All right, I'll leave it.
Another beat, and then she somberly says,
I'm here for you. Anything you need, I'll drop everything.
I know. You're a good friend. With a smile in her voice, she replies,
Yes, I am.
After I hang up with Sasha, I go back to my shows and stress eating. A few episodes later, there's a knock at the door. I'm confused for a minute, wondering if I'd forgotten I ordered something else, until I hear another knock and Abigail's voice asking me to let her in. Fuck. Before you tell me to piss off, she says when I reluctantly open the door, I come in peace and to apologize. It's fine, I reply just to get rid of her. You apologized. Bye. I try to close the door, but she pushes it open and slips her skinny ass in before I can slam her foot in the door jamb. Abigail? I huff. I just want to be left alone. Yeah. Scrunching her face at my never-to-be-seen-by-another-human-person sweat ensemble, she says, I can see that. Why are you here, dammit? Being Abigail, she waltzes over to one of the stools at the tiny kitchen island and takes a seat. I heard you broke up with Connor. Seriously? You want to start with that? Fucking unbelievable. I didn't mean it like that, she says quickly, and takes a breath before starting over. I mean, I think you made a mistake. Her pretenses drop, that air of permanent bitchiness. For the first time in a long time, she's regarding me without a smirk of cruelty or sarcasm. It's sort of creepy. Still not ready to trust her intentions, I stand against the opposite counter from her. Why do you care? Not that I give a shit what she thinks. Okay, look, I do this too. There's a chord of sympathy in her voice. You're upset,
and embarrassed, and you want to push everyone away, especially the people closest to you. That way, they don't see the pain you're going through. They don't see you the way you feel about yourself. I get it. I truly do. First Sasha, now Abigail? Why can't everyone just leave me alone? What the hell do you know about anything? I mutter. You run through boys like makeup wipes. I have issues too, she insists. Just because you don't see my insecurities doesn't mean they aren't there. We all have scars on the inside. Yeah, well, I'm sorry about your deep personal traumas, but you're one of mine, so... If Abigail is feeling some remorse because her ass-headedness blew up in my face, she's going to have to turn elsewhere for absolution. She might have sympathy for me, but I have none for her. That's exactly what I mean, she says ruefully. I was so insecure about you kissing a guy I was dating on a stupid dare that the only way I knew how to cope with that was to take my hurt out on you. After the kiss, he wouldn't shut up about, oh, her huge tits, and have you ever thought about implants and all kinds of shit? Do you know how humiliating that is? A crease cuts into my forehead. I didn't know that. I mean, sure, I knew she was pissed, but if a guy I was seeing kept going on about it, comparing us, I'd have lost my shit too. In high school, she confesses, drawing patterns on the countertop, I was called pancakes. I didn't even have enough to fill out a training bra. I know you probably think that's a stupid thing to obsess about, but all I've wanted for my entire life was to feel good in my clothes, you know? To feel sexy. For guys to look at me the way they look at other girls. But you're gorgeous, I say, exasperated. You've got a perfect body and a beautiful face. You know the last time I wore a bikini? I was still sleeping with a nightlight. I gesture to my chest. These things are a fucking burden. They're heavy. They don't fit any apparatus known to man. I've got back problems like I'm 70. Every guy I meet is staring at my boobs to distract him from the rest of me. Except Connor, which sends another pang of loneliness stabbing through my gut. And yet, I never feel good enough. I never feel confident in who I am, Abigail counters. I make up for it with being a bitch. She smiles, rolling her eyes. Mostly, yeah. My point is, I felt like shit and pushed people away too. That's what you're doing with Connor, and it sucks. I don't know or care at what point you two stopped messing with me, and don't bother denying it. I saw right through that bullshit. But at some point, it changed, and you made it official. Yeah, I noticed that too. He obviously loves you, and if your sudden change in attitude the last couple weeks is any indication, you loved him too. So what sense does it make to lose that because someone else did a shitty thing? You don't understand, because she can't, and I don't know what else to tell her that doesn't sound like an excuse. Even the thought of facing Connor after this makes my throat close up and my legs shake. Thanks for coming by, but fine. She pivots, sensing I'm about to tell her to beat it so I can get back to conversations that take place exclusively in a Manchester accent. We won't talk about Connor. Or that the flowers he left for you are now taking up the entire living room coffee table. Have you gone to the police yet? You've got to be kidding me. Did Jules send you over here? I demand. No, she says quickly. Nothing like that, I promise. Just, if you are going to report the video, I'll go with you. I can explain how Jules got access to it and everything. Be a witness if you want. This topic is getting exhausting. You know, I'm getting a little sick of people pushing me. Everyone has their ideas of what I have to do, and it's pretty damn overwhelming. Can I have, like, a fucking minute? I know this is scary, but you really should go to the police, Abigail insists. If you don't attack this now, it will spread. What happens when one day you apply for a job or, who knows, you want to run for office or something and this video pops up? It will live with you forever. She flicks up her eyebrows. Or you can do something about it. You're not the best person to be giving me advice, I remind her. It's easy for others to say, this is what must be done. Tell me to suck it up. If our positions were reversed, I might say the same. Things look a whole lot different on this end, though. The last thing I want to be doing is weighing the impact of court cases and depositions, headlines and news vans, with tucking myself under the blankets and never, ever coming out again. The latter is a whole lot cozier. You're right. I've been terrible to you. I didn't know how to deal with my feelings. Abigail looks down at her hands, picking at her nails. You were my best friend during Pledge. Yeah, I remember, I say bitterly. I was so excited about us being sisters. Then it all went wrong. That was my fault. I should have done something about it then, talked it out or whatever, and instead it's only gotten worse. I lost a friend. But I'm trying to start making up for that. Let me help you. Why should I? It's all well and good that Abigail has reached her epiphany, but it doesn't mean we're going to be besties now. Because with shit like this, women have to stick together, she says earnestly. This transcends all that other bullshit. Jules was wrong. No one deserves what she did. I want her punished for you, but also for all of us. Even if you never talk to me after this, I've got your back. Every single Kappa does. I admit she sounds sincere, which I suppose means she isn't entirely devoid of humanity. And it did take courage to come here. She gets bonus points for laying her shit out and taking the blame. That takes integrity. Maybe it's never too late to become a better person for either of us. I won't promise to go to the police, I tell her, but I'll think about it. Fair, she says, with a smile that reads as hopeful. Can I make one more suggestion? I roll my eyes with a smirk. If you must. At least let me get my mom to send takedown notices to any sites hosting the video. She's an attorney, Abigail explains. Lots of times she can scare people with just the letterhead. You don't have to do a thing or talk to anyone. Actually, that's a great idea. I was dreading trying to figure all that shit out. If Abigail's mother can just use her fancy law degree and make it go away, that'd be swell. I'd really appreciate it, I say, my voice sounding annoyingly shaky. And I do appreciate you coming over. So, she twists on her stool like a child. We're not sworn enemies anymore? Maybe more like stepsisters. I can live with that.
41. Connor. A horn blares. Jolted, I snap up, but make it only inches before my head slams into I don't know what. I can't feel my legs. Something is digging into my side. My arm is trapped under my body and the other one is numb, wedged under another horn, jarring, ear-splitting, a long succession of deafening wails. Fuck me. Wake up, dickhead. The screaming horn stops. My head drops toward blinding light as I stare up at a bright blue sky and Hunter Davenport's face. I realize then that I'm stuffed on the floor of the back seat of his Land Rover, my head now hanging out the open passenger door. The fuck? I grumble, struggling to get my limbs or wits about me, but I'm unable to pry myself free of the tangled puzzle. We've been looking for you since last night, dipshit. Hunter grabs my arms and yanks me out of the SUV, then drops me in a heap on the pavement. With effort and tingles buzzing through every sleeping nerve, I climb to my feet and reach for the vehicle to prop myself up. My brain is blurry, eyes unfocused. My head erupts in pain. For a second, I think I've got it under control. Then I sprint, unsteady and clumsy, to the grass to upchuck what tastes like Fireball, Red Bull, and Jaeger. I hate myself so much. Feel better? Hunter asks cheerfully, handing me a bottle of water. No. I take a few swigs, swish, and spit it out in the bushes. I know these bushes. I'm near my driveway. I don't remember leaving the party across town, though, and I definitely don't remember getting in Hunter's car. Where's my Jeep? Wait, you said you'd been looking for me? Man, you went MIA last night. I check my pockets and find my keys, phone, and wallet, so at least I'm good in that department. We go back to Hunter's Rover and lean against the trunk while I take inventory of my last recollections. There was a house party at some friend of Demi's. The guys were all there. We played beer pong, the usual. I remember pounding shots with Foster and Bucky. A girl. Shit. Where'd you go? Hunter asks, apparently seeing the realization creep across my face. I made out with some chick, I say, half as a question. Yeah, we all saw. You two were all up on each other in the kitchen. Then you disappeared. Fuck. She took me into one of the bedrooms. We were going at it, you know, kissing and whatnot. Then she tried to get my pants off to blow me and I bugged out. Couldn't do it. Whiskey dick. Limp as a piece of raw chicken. I searched my brain. I think I sort of left her there. Demi saw her come down, but we couldn't find you after that, Hunter tells me. Nobody could. We all started calling, fanned out looking for you. It's all pretty fuzzy. There are gaps, starts and stops of a jittery picture. I left the house, I think, out the back. It was too crowded in the yard and I couldn't find the gate in the fence, so I think I hopped it. I look down at my hands. They're all scratched up and my jeans have a fresh tear in them. I look like I went rolling down the side of a mountain. Then I think I was going to walk home, but I couldn't figure out which way I was pointed or where home was. I remember being real fucking confused about where I was. And I think my phone died, so I was like, fuck it. I'll just wait for one of you to take me home. I don't know why, but I guess I crawled in your back seat. Jesus, dude. Hunter shakes his head laughing at me. Rightly so. I left the car at the party last night after we suspended the search. Demi and I walked home because we'd both been drinking. Foster called this morning and said you never came home, so I went back for my car so I could start driving around checking ditches for you. Found you in my back seat and drove you home. Sorry, man. This isn't the first time I've woken up in a strange place after a night out, but it's the first time it's happened since I came to Briar. Guess I got a little out of hand last night. You've been a little out of hand all week. Hunter turns to me, arms crossed. He's got his captain's face on, the I'm not your daddy but face. Maybe it's time you take it down a notch with the partying. I know I was team drink it out of your system before, but now I'm calling it. Going missing for 12 hours is the limit. He's right. I've been out every night since Taylor dumped me, knocking back drinks like it's my job, trying to lose the memory of her in some other girl's face. Only it doesn't work. Not for my heart, and not for my dick. I miss her. I miss only her. You should try talking to her again, Hunter says gruffly. It's been a few days. Maybe she's ready to come around. I've texted her. She won't text me back. Probably blocked my number by now. Look, I can't begin to understand what went wrong there, but when she's ready, I know you two can work it out. I don't know Taylor well or anything, but anyone could see you were both happy together. She's going through something, like you were before. He shrugs. Maybe it's her turn to figure stuff out. She already has. She finally figured out that she's too damn good for me. I might be making strides to better my life, but I'm not there yet, and Taylor knew it, and she didn't want to wait around, I guess. I almost don't even blame her. What the fuck have I ever done for her aside from giving her some orgasms and standing her up at a dance? I choke down the rush of bitterness that fills my throat. Hey, at least it's not puke anymore. Anyway, whatever you need, man, you know I'm here for you. Hunter pats me on the back, then gives me a shove. Now get the hell off my car. I've got to go wash the piss out of the back seat. Fuck off. There's no piss there. I pause. Just some vomit, maybe. Asshole. Thanks for the ride, I say laughing as I back away. See you later. I head into the house where I take a ragging from the roommates about last night. Won't be living this one down for a long time. They invite me to brunch at the diner, but I'm exhausted, and I've got a shit ton of packing to do before I head back to Cali in a few days. So I go take a shower, and they go out and bring me back some waffles and bacon. About an hour into laundry and packing boxes, our doorbell rings. The guys are deep into a video game, so I wander over to the front door and answer it. On the other side, I find half a dozen of Taylor's Kappa sisters, led by the infamous Abigail. Before I can get a word out, she says, "Truce. We're on the same side." I blink. Huh? I don't invite her in so much as she invites herself, plus the six other girls trailing behind. They march into the house and take a stance like a troop of angry townsfolk in the middle of the living room. Foster gives me a wary look from the couch. "Hunter said no more parties." "Shut up, dumbass." I focus on Abigail, who's clearly the leader of this invasion. If it has something to do with Taylor, I want to hear it. "Why are you here?"
"Listen up." She steps forward, hands on her hips. "Taylor didn't dump you because she doesn't love you anymore."
"Oh, snap," Foster exclaims, then buttons his lips when I shoot a warning glance at him.
"She dumped you because there's a video going around of her from Pledge Week freshman year. It was never supposed to be public, but someone uploaded it to embarrass her. Now she's humiliated and scared, and she didn't want you to know about it, so she broke up with you first."
"What kind of video?" I demand, confused with the vagueness of it. "And if she didn't want me to know, why are you here?"
"Because," Abigail says, "if I rip the Band-Aid off for her, maybe she'll stop being afraid and fight back."
If she means what she's saying, I guess she isn't quite the enemy anymore. No telling what brought on this sudden change of heart, but that's another conversation entirely, and one I'm not sure is mine to have. I'm not ready to trust her completely, but this would be a hell of a long way to go to pull a prank. "Fight back against what?" Matt asks from his spot in the recliner. "Good question." The other guys sit up, anxious and interested. The controllers in game are all but forgotten. Abigail looks around awkwardly.
"On the last night of Pledge Week, they had us in tank tops and underwear, and the seniors hosed us down while ordering Taylor and another girl to make out. They recorded it. Last week, someone stole the video and posted it on a porn site. It's graphic. As in, you can see, you know, stuff."
"Oh, hell no." Foster looks at me, eyes wide. Motherfuckers. An overwhelming urge to punch a wall flashes through my mind, but I stop just short, remembering the last time I did that, I hit a stud in the wall and broke my hand. The fury has no outlet and instead courses through my blood. Heart to fingers to toes and back up again, hot, boiling rage accompanied by the images assaulting my mind. Random guys watching her, leering at her, jerking it to my girlfriend. Fuck, all I want to do is start ripping heads off. I glance at Alec and Gavin, both of them hunched forward like they're about to launch out of their seats, fists clenched just like mine. "How am I only hearing about this video now if you say it's been going around?" I demand.
"Honestly, I'm surprised you didn't already know."
She glances at her fellow Kappas with a pleased nod.
"I guess our efforts are working."
"Efforts?" I frown.
"To shut it down and stop it from spreading through campus. We ordered everyone on Greek Row to shut the hell up about the video and not pass it around. But I didn't expect any of those jackasses to actually listen, especially the frats. We've been doing everything we can to try to stop this shit from going viral."
"Who?" I growl through gritted teeth. "Who uploaded it?"
"One of our Kappa sisters, now former sister."
Abigail is quick to add.
"And my ex-boyfriend."
That's all the guys needed to hear. There's another dude whose ass we could kick. They jump to their feet without delay. "Where do we find this asshole?" Foster grunts. "She'd curb stomp his face. About to fuck up his whole day. Dude better have a will."
"No," Abigail orders, throwing her hands up like a blockade. "We came here because you need to convince Taylor to go to the police. We tried to work on her and the other sister in the video, but they're scared. We hoped if you could get through to Taylor, she'd convince the other girl it's the right thing to do.
Nah, fuck that, I mutter. She can do what she wants. I'm gonna fucking shred this jackass.
You can't. Trust me, Kevin's a sniveling little shit, and he'll absolutely go to the cops if you lay a hand on him. You'll end up in jail, and who's going to protect Taylor then? So simmer down, big guy, and listen.
Taylor isn't talking to me. I tell the girls, who are all looking at me like I'm an idiot. I've tried.
So try harder.
Abigail rolls her eyes, making a show of sighing loudly.
Duh. Put your back into it,
another one says.
Mind over matter.
This comes from one of the chicks who was at the diner that one time. Olivia something or other. They're right, though. Much as I'd like to drag this fucker behind my Jeep, now would be a terrible time to get arrested. As long as that video of Taylor is out there, she's a target. Who knows what kind of sick pervert might get a real dumb idea to mess with her. I've got to be here to watch her back, even if she doesn't know I am. I'd do anything to keep her safe. I'll try. I promise Taylor's sorority sisters. My voice sounds raspy, so I clear my throat. I'll head over to her place now. If Abigail's story about why Taylor broke it off is true, I've got to get her back. Up until this point, I hadn't wanted to push Taylor too hard. Yeah, I probably blew up her phone too much the night she ended it, but I didn't stand outside her window with a portable speaker or wait outside her classes with a banner. I didn't want to be overbearing and wind up driving her further away. But now I realize I was hiding too. The things she'd said that night had really hurt. She'd stirred up all my insecurities, and I've been nursing my pride ever since. I didn't chase her or beg her to take me back because I didn't think there was any reason for her to do that. Because I wasn't worthy of her. More than that, I think I was afraid of a final rejection there'd be no return from. If I avoided the subject, I could keep believing there was a chance at some distant time where we'd come back to each other. If I didn't look in the box, the cat was both alive and dead. This changes everything.
42. Taylor. I feel like I've put on 5 pounds this week, and I can't find it in me to care. After the first shower I've taken in 2 days, I throw on a peasant top and a pair of jeans. My mom called yesterday to invite me to another family dinner with Chad and Brenna Jensen, so I have no choice but to make an effort. That means brushing my hair, too. Ugh. This time, they're making the safe play to eat out at the Italian place in town rather than risk another cooking catastrophe. I'd tried to make an excuse to decline, but Mom wasn't having it. Then, of course, I had to dodge on the topic of Connor when she told me to invite him. I told her he was busy, and besides, whatever Coach might have said, he'd probably appreciate not having one of his players tagging along on all his dates. She bought it, albeit skeptically. Mom can read me like a book. I'm sure she's guessed the relationship has fizzled out, but she's gracefully declining to press for details. As much as I'm dreading tonight, I suppose it offers a distraction from the obvious, a commercial break in my infinite binge and self-pity party. I've just got my hair up in a ponytail when there's knocking on the door. I check my phone for the time. They're early. Whatever. I didn't feel like putting on makeup anyway. Just give me a second to find my shoes, I say as I fling open the door. It isn't my mom. Not Brenna either. Connor stands in my doorway.
Hey,
he says roughly. I'm momentarily struck by him. It's like my heart had forgotten his face, his aura, his magnetism and spirit. I've forgotten the electric air that crackles around us whenever we're in the same space. My body still a slave to its baser instincts. You can't be here, I blurt out.
Are you going somewhere?
He examines me, taken aback. I have plans. As badly as I want to throw my arms around him, I force myself to stick to my guns, bite down and bear it. You can't be here, Connor. Already the nerves are tightening my chest, butterflies taking flight in my stomach.
The strong urge to slam the door in his face and hide rears its head, as shame and embarrassment join the tangle of emotions I'm already feeling. I'm a war within a war, at odds with myself and losing.
We need to talk.
Connor takes up the entire doorway, all broad shoulders and wide chest. Tension pounds off him like a palpable drumbeat. Now's not a good time. I try to shut the door on him. Instead, he muscles his way through like I'm not even standing here.
Yeah, I'm sorry,
he says, barging in,
but this can't wait.
What the hell is the matter with you? I charge into the living room after him. His tone is flat, unhappy.
I know everything, T. Abigail came to my house and explained it all. The video, why you broke up with me. I know.
Shock flies into me. Is he serious? And here I thought Abigail and I had an understanding. We're really going to have to work on our communication. Well, I'm sorry she involved you, I mutter, but it's really none of your concern, so...
I'm not sorry,
he cuts in.
Not one bit. What would ever make you think I wouldn't want to stand beside you through this? That I wouldn't want to be here to protect you?
I ignore the sharp clench of my heart, avoid his imploring eyes. I don't want to talk about it.
Come on, Taylor. This is me. You dragged my deepest, darkest secrets out of me because it almost cost us all of this,
he says, gesturing between us.
You can talk to me. Nothing changes how I feel about you.
His deep voice shakes slightly.
Let me help.
I don't have time for this, or the emotional bandwidth. I'm strung out, exhausted. There's no fight left in me this time. All I want is to close my eyes and make it all go away. My mom is on her way over with Chad and Brenna for dinner.
So cancel. Let's go to the police station. I promise I'll be right there beside you.
You don't understand, Connor. I can't. As humiliated as you were to talk to your mom and Max about Kai and the break-in, this is 100 times worse.
But you didn't do anything wrong,
he counters.
You're not the one who messed up.
It's humiliating, I shout back. Oh my God, I'm at my fucking wit's end having to explain this to everyone else. Don't they get it? Don't they see? I go in there, make a report, then that's another 12 people who see the video, I say desperately, starting to pace. They file a case, go to court, that's another 12, 24. Every move I make invites more people to see me like that.
So what?
He snaps.
You've got to be getting sick of me telling you that you're hot as hell, Taylor. Some poor suckers get a few seconds of joy watching you do nothing more than kiss a girl.
And you don't care if a bunch of strangers see me practically naked?
I fucking care,
he growls.
And if you want me to beat the shit out of every dude in a 20-mile radius who looks at you funny, I will. But there's nothing about this that you should be ashamed of. You did nothing wrong. You're the victim. When Abigail came by and told me and the guys, every one of them was ready to throw down in your honor. Nobody was cracking jokes or grabbing their phones. We're only concerned for you. You're all I care about, Taylor.
My heart is breaking. Not for me, but for everything we almost were. How good it could have been if Jules hadn't thrown a grenade in the middle of our relationship. You don't know how it feels, I whisper. I can't just get over it.
No one's asking you to. Just to stick up for yourself.
And maybe for me, that means waiting for it to blow over and trying to trick myself into forgetting. You don't know what it's like to feel like the whole world has seen you naked.
You're right.
He pauses for a beat.
Maybe I should.
I blink, and suddenly Connor is yanking off his shirt. What do you think you're doing?
Empathizing.
He kicks off his shoes. Stop it, I order.
No.
His socks go next. Then he drops his pants in the middle of my living room and pushes his boxers down his legs. Connor, put your fucking pants back on. And yet my eyes can't pry themselves from his dick. It's just so there. Without another word, he strides out the front door. "Get back here, you lunatic!" When I hear his footsteps on the stairs, I grab his discarded clothing and chase after him. But the jackass is fast. I don't catch up to him until he's across the parking lot and standing on the grass that abuts the road.
"Get your phones out, people,"
Connor shouts into the air, his muscular arms spread wide.
"Don't see this every day."
"You've lost your damn mind." I watch him twirling, gorgeous and ridiculous. He has a body you only see in airbrushed fantasies, but it isn't supposed to be wiggling around on the front lawn. "Oh my God, Connor, stop! Someone's going to call the cops on you."
"I'll plead temporary insanity due to a broken heart," he says.
Fortunately, this is exclusively a college student-infested street. For at least 5 blocks in every direction from campus, no townies dare to tread. Families long ago escaped the midweek parties and drunks passed out in the bushes, so that means no traumatized children either. Doors start opening up and down the street. Window blinds are separating. He's got an audience now. Shouts and whistles ring out, an eruption of horny banter. "Stop encouraging him!" I yell back at the spectators. I refocus my attention on Connor and his amazing swinging penis and groan in frustration. "Will you please stop?"
"Never. I've gone completely mad for you, Taylor Antonia Marsh."
"That's not even my middle name."
"It's a middle name, and I don't care. If this is what I have to do to take away your embarrassment, I'll do it. I'll do anything."
"You need to be hospitalized," I declare, all the while smothering the laughter threatening to spill over. This man is ridiculous. I've never met anyone like Connor Edwards, this sexy, crazy handful who's flashing the entire neighborhood just to prove a point and make me feel not as alone.
"Edwards,"
someone thunders. A car rolls up, and from the driver's side window, Chad Jensen pokes his head out.
"What the hell are you doing running around with no pants on? Put your damn cock away."
Connor glances over at the car, completely unfazed.
"Hey, coach,"
he drawls.
"What's up?"
When he realizes my mother is in the passenger side, he offers a sheepish smile.
"Dr. Mom, good to see you again."
Unbelievable. I shove Connor's clothes at him. As he covers his junk, I glance over at my mother and see that her lips are shaking with the effort not to laugh, and her eyes are watering. Brenna, on the other hand, is hysterical in the back seat. So loud, her laughter is echoing off the buildings. "Are you quite finished?" I ask this big, dumb idiot with a heart of gold.
"Only if you're ready to go to the police."
"The police?" My mother leans toward the window, visibly alarmed. "What's wrong?" I shoot Connor a glare. I could lie, make up some innocuous story my mom wouldn't buy but might accept as an alternative to the clear indication that I don't want to discuss it. I could say Connor was just chasing away a creeper who had been hanging around, fight dick with dick or whatever. Mom understands boundaries. She trusts my judgment and doesn't push me to make uncomfortable decisions. And maybe that's why I don't, and never have. Nobody has ever encouraged me to make the hard choices, and I never pushed myself to do it. My whole life, I simply retreated into myself, allowed an ever-growing chasm to build between me and anything that could cause me pain, anything that could reject me. I created my own safe space and avoided drawing attention to myself. No one can point fingers if they can't see me. There's nothing for them to laugh at if I'm not there. I stayed inside my bubble, safe and alone. No, I don't especially like my friends and enemies and lovers joining forces to press my hand. It's not how I operate. And yet, maybe it was exactly what I needed. A good kick in the ass. Not because they're right or I'm wrong, but because I wasn't serving myself. I was serving my fears. I've been feeding them and allowing them to take up more space inside me until I'm no longer myself and can't remember a time I was anything else. This is how people grow up to be old and bitter, jaded and spiteful. when they let the world and the bad actors in it strip them of joy and replace it with doubt and insecurities. I'm too young to be this unhappy and too loved to be this alone. I owe myself better. My gaze drifts to Connor, whose earnest gray eyes tell me he won't leave my side if I allow him to stand beside me. Then I turn toward my mom, whose concern is visible and whose support is mine for the taking. These are people who want to fight for me. I should want to fight for myself. I meet Mom's gaze and give her a reassuring smile. I'll tell you on the way to the police station. 43. Taylor. It's late when Connor and I get back to my apartment. I leave him on the couch watching TV while I take a long, hot bath. I put on my relaxation playlist and turn off the lights except for a couple of candles on the bathroom counter. And for the first time in a week, I feel some of the tension leaving my body. It was mortifying explaining the situation to my mom while Connor drove the three of us in his Jeep tonight. I was sorry I was the reason she called off dinner with Chad and Brenna, but when I tried to apologize for spoiling her plans, she wouldn't have it. "My daughter comes first," she'd said firmly, and it was as if all the times she'd neglected me in the past had just disappeared. Today, I was her first priority, her only concern. Everything had ceased to exist for her but me, and for that, I was grateful. After a chain of text messages, Abigail, Sasha, and Rebecca met us at the police station. I had a good conversation with Rebecca before we made the decision to go through with filing a report. Both of us were hesitant. Her because of what her parents might think, me because of the added exposure. Eventually, we came around to the idea that we could turn this into an opportunity for something positive. We didn't ask for this, but rather than hiding, ashamed, we could take our power back. So with the beginnings of a plan in mind, we walked in there together, stronger. As Abigail's mother explained to us over the phone, Massachusetts doesn't have a specific revenge porn law. If Abigail herself, for instance, had uploaded the video, it might not have been a crime. However, Jules and Abigail's ex, Kevin, can be charged under other state laws for the unauthorized access to Abigail's phone, the Kappa Cloud server, copying the video, and uploading it without consent. Mrs. Hobbs believes, and the officer we spoke to agreed, that there's a strong case. I didn't ask what would happen to Jules and Kevin or when. I don't particularly care, as long as they're punished. My mother, however, called Breyer's dean of students at home and scheduled a meeting with him first thing tomorrow morning. By the end of the day, I suspect Breyer will begin the process of expelling those two. My brain is still spinning. Dominoes in my mind have yet to fall, just the click, click, click of 1,000 consequences rapidly colliding toward an eventual conclusion at some distant time, in some future place. The panic has subsided, though. The overwhelming cord of dread around my neck has loosened. Instead, I'm bursting with ideas, surging with adrenaline. I'm sure the chemical stimulation will fade soon, and I'll crash a few days from now to sleep for a week. Until then, ... After I get out of the bath and put on my pajamas, I stand in the hall for a moment, watching Connor on the couch. His eyes are closed, head lolled to one shoulder. His chest rises and falls on deep, restful breaths. He's remarkable. Not many guys would have reacted to the situation the way he did, appreciated the gravity of the violation rather than making light of my humiliation. But that's Connor. He has an instinct toward empathy that most guys don't. He'd rather make people around him feel good about themselves, even when it provides no personal gain for himself. More than anything, that's what I fell in love with. I was foolish to think I needed to protect him. He's the strongest, most resilient person I know. I'm tempted to let him sleep a while longer, but as if he senses me watching him, his eyes blink open and find me in the shadows.
"Sorry,"
he says huskily.
Didn't mean to crash on you.
No, it's fine. It's been a long day. A nervous silence ensues. Connor shifts around, collecting his phone and keys from between the couch cushions.
Anyway, I'll get out of your way. Just wanted to make sure you were okay after everything.
He gets up to leave, coming around the couch. No, I say, stopping him. Stay. You want anything? Are you hungry? I catch his arm and then release it like it bit me. I don't know how to be around him now. The ease between us isn't here right now. It feels stilted and forced. But there's also this indefinable urge to be near him that grows stronger the longer he's here.
Not really,
he says. Yeah, me neither. Shit. This is awkward. As far as I can tell, we're still broken up. Despite everything we'd been through with each other over the past few weeks, I don't know how to approach the subject. I mean, I stood outside the Kappa house and shoved a knife through his chest. He came back to help me in a time of need, but that doesn't mean all is forgiven. We can, watch a movie? I suggest. Baby steps. Connor nods. Then an almost imperceptible smirk dances across his lips.
You inviting me to Netflix and chill?
Damn, you're easy. I mean, geez, Connor, have some respect for yourself. You'll never find a good woman if you're always giving the milk away for free. He sighs dramatically.
My mom keeps saying the same thing, but I never learn.
We laugh, still standing all stupid and nervous in the middle of my apartment. Then his expression sobers.
We should talk,
he says. Yeah. He leads me over to the couch to sit, facing me but staring at his hands in his lap. He struggles to find a place to start.
I don't know where your head's at or what your expectations are. I don't have any, I want you to know. You're going through something. I get it. And I want to be here for you, but only as much as you want me to.
He shrugs awkwardly.
Whatever that looks like.
I open my mouth to interject, but he holds a hand up to say he isn't finished yet. After a deep breath, he continues.
I made out with another girl last night at a party.
I briefly close my eyes. All right. His throat dips as he swallows.
I got hammered and it happened. She took me to a bedroom to do more, but I couldn't go through with it, physically or emotionally. Honestly, though, it was more of a physical impairment. I might have gone through with it if the equipment was working.
I nod slowly.
I wasn't thinking straight. Then afterward, I felt sick about it. It wasn't like I set out to find a revenge lay or to get over you with someone else. I was hurt, confused, pissed off. So all I wanted to do was drink my feelings. Shit got out of control.
We were broken up, I tell him sincerely. You don't have to explain.
I do. I want to. Because I don't want any more secrets. Not mine, anyway. I don't want you to ever have a reason to doubt or mistrust me.
I do trust you. He looks up, and in his cool gray eyes, I see the wounds I've inflicted. The insecurity I've instilled. A month ago, I would have said Connor fucking Edwards was impervious to everyone and everything, completely immune to heartache. I was wrong.
Then why?
He asks roughly.
Why did breaking up seem like the only solution?
Because it's what I've always done. I hide. Shame clamps around my throat. Hiding felt like the safer option, the path of least embarrassment. Just cut ties and escape and everything will be okay.
I wish you'd trusted that I would be there for you.
My eyes widen. God, no. You don't get it. I had no doubt you'd be there. That was the one thing I knew I could trust. But I didn't want to put you through all that. I swallow hard because suddenly my throat feels too tight and dry. I need you to know something. I start, gulp again. I didn't mean any of those awful things I said to you. I only said them because I needed you to accept the breakup. It was wrong and hurtful, and I'm so sorry I didn't have the nerve to tell you the truth. Tears sting my eyelids. I was afraid of what you'd think of me, that you'd be embarrassed by me. It was humiliating enough to deal with all this myself. I didn't want to make it your problem, too. Didn't want you to see me differently.
I only see you.
He takes my hand, rubbing his thumb over the inside of my wrist.
Just as you are. I don't imagine you as some impossible ideal. To me, you're real.
His lips quirk in a half smile.
Stubborn, opinionated, pushy, funny, intelligent, kind. Too hard on herself, snarky, sarcastic, jaded, yet somehow a closeted optimist. I fell in love with you for you, T. Nothing you could say or do would embarrass me. Ever.
Considering how we met, right? I say, smiling.
I knew you were nervous. Scared shitless, even.
His thumb continues its soft caresses across my skin, lulling me into a calm I haven't felt in days.
Still, you were brave and so refreshingly honest. I was having dirty thoughts about you right away. But my favorite thing about you that first night was that you were completely unpretentious.
Yeah, it was pretty much the hair for me, I say solemnly. Oh, and the abs. The abs are good too. Connor laughs, shaking his head.
You're such a brat.
For real though, I'm sorry. For all of it. I freaked out and made a rash decision. It just seemed like the only thing I could do at the time. I put on a firm tone. I need you to know that I'm on board with whatever career path you choose. You do have prospects, and whatever you decide will always be good enough for me. That bullshit I fed you when I ended it was just that. Bullshit. I didn't mean a single word of it. He laces his fingers through mine, squeezing.
I get it. We both made mistakes.
Thank you for sticking by my side even though I was pushing you away. For not turning your back on me.
Never.
Leaning in, I place a kiss on his lips. He hesitates, just for a beat. Then, as if he's suddenly convinced it's really happening, his hands go to my ribs and pull my body against his. His kiss is soft, but greedy. Sweet hunger and gentle need.
I still love you.
He whispers against my mouth. I still love you, I whisper back. Getting to my knees, I straddle his lap as he slides to lie back against the armrest. My fingers tangle in the long, silky strands of hair at the base of his neck. Is it too late to plead temporary insanity? I ask.
I thought we were going to pretend the whole breakup was a vivid fever dream.
Connor's thumbs drag slow, agonizing strokes under my breasts. I could go along with that. I kiss along his jaw, his neck. In response, his fingers dig into my skin. He's hard between my legs, hips rising to meet me. I pull his shirt over his head and toss it aside. Then, with unhurried attention, I explore his bare chest with my mouth. I kiss those glorious abs, nip at the skin just above the waistband of his jeans until he shudders and his sinewy muscles contract. Can I? I murmur, tugging at his belt. Connor nods tightly, jaw clenched, as if it's taking all his effort to lie still. It's that coiled, kinetic strength of him that's always attracted and intrigued me. A man so at once peaceful and dynamic. I free his erection from his jeans, stroking the thick length as his hands reach above his head to grip a throw pillow. He watches me with anticipation, rapt and eager.
Fuck, Taylor. You're the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
My sweet-talking man. Smiling, I take him in my mouth, slowly at first, then with more intent. I moan at the masculine taste of him, the heat of his cock as it slides through my lips.
So beautiful,
he mumbles, sliding his fingers down to cup my head, play with my hair.
I suck and lick and tease until he's panting and groaning. I could do this forever. But it's not long before his hand brushes the side of my face and his hips pull away to signal I have to stop unless I want this to be over quickly. So I straddle him again, pressing myself against his hard cock, grinding on his shaft. Connor grabs my ass with both hands, urging my movements. I tug my shirt over my head, and his attention moves to my breasts. He cups them, kneading them in both hands, his thumbs playing with my nipples. Then he adjusts his position and sits up, one arm wrapped behind my back to support us both. He lowers his head and sucks one nipple into his mouth, while his fingers tease the other. Within seconds, my insides are twisted tight, my clit is throbbing, and I can't stand the teasing any longer.
I want to be inside you,
he breathes. Condoms are in the bedroom. With no warning, he stands up and carries me to the bed. He puts a condom on while I shimmy out of my pajama shorts. We're both naked now, breathing hard, gazes locked. Then he growls,
come here.
And I smile and climb on top of him. I lean down and press my lips to his, and just as he parts them to let my tongue slide into his mouth, I deliberately come down on his dick. We both moan, delighting in the sensation. He fills me completely, his body satiating my every aching need. He doesn't rush me. Hands resting loosely on my hips, he lets me set the pace, find my own perfect rhythm where every plunge sends pleasure skittering across my nerve endings. Soon, I quicken my movements, riding him with greater insistence. Connor bites down on his lip but can't stop the low, quiet groans that build in his chest. And when he can't control his body, he grabs my tits with both hands and thrusts his hips into me, harder, faster, both of us sprinting toward magnificent release. He knows my body, sometimes even better than I do. Sensing my need, he presses his thumb to my clit and starts rubbing. Gentle at first, then applying more pressure as I rock forward and back on his dick, finding that perfect angle where he's deep inside and hitting the sweetest spot. Oh, fucking fuck turtles, I'm coming, I choke out, and his answering laughter heats the air around us. I'm too mindless with orgasm to laugh back. My muscles clench in a cascade of pure bliss, and I collapse on top of him as my body trembles wildly. He chases his own orgasm, pumping into me until he finds his own release a moment later, moaning my name. Afterward, we're hot and sweaty and clinging to one another.
I missed you,
he says, breathless. I missed us.
Let's stop breaking up. Deal?
I'm not sure how I got lucky enough to meet Connor Edwards. Like all the times the world took a shit on my shoes were leading up to this one big, I'm sorry gift. Sometimes we make all the wrong decisions, end up in all the wrong places, and still find exactly where we're supposed to be. Connor's my happy accident, my wrong place, wrong time, exactly right guy. He taught me how to love myself against my best efforts, showed me an image of myself I'd never believed was there. Strong, beautiful, confident. And I'll never take that for granted again. Rising up on my elbow, I peer into his sated, heavy-lidded eyes and smile. Deal.
Epilogue. Connor. Well, it took a few bruises and a hell of a lot of patience, but I finally got Taylor to stand up on a surfboard. From just beyond the swells, I straddle my board and watch as she rides the end of a wave into the shallow foam. Her stance is still a bit awkward and uncertain, but I think she's getting a feel for it. When she pops out of the water after her ride into shore, she's got a big shiny grin on her face. She waves, ecstatic, making sure I saw her. Then she hops up and down a couple times and forms a victory sign with her arms. Fuck, she's adorable. Having her here in Huntington Beach the last 3 weeks has been such a relief for both of us. Zero stress, just sleeping in, chilling at the beach, showing her the sights. It's the perfect antidote for the heartaches back on campus. My mom and Max love her, so much so they're already making plans for Thanksgiving and Christmas. She's my future now, and I'm hers. Coach is totally going to kick my ass when he realizes he's stuck with me at another family dinner with Iris. I had hoped I could keep Taylor's mind off anything that wasn't the beach or us doing naked stuff, but a few times now I've caught her on the phone or with her laptop open, hard at work. Apparently, when she and Rebecca made the decision to file the police report, they hatched a plan first. With Abigail and Kappa's help, they're petitioning the Greek Council on campus to host a seminar on consent, sexual assault, and sexual harassment. They're inviting several guest speakers to host talks and want to promote a month of outreach and awareness ahead of Pledge Week in the fall. I've never seen Taylor so passionate and engaged on anything. Not gonna lie, at first I was worried the project might start to have a negative effect on her mood, dragging all of those feelings to the surface again. But it's done just the opposite. She's never looked happier since they got the ball rolling on this. It's like having a mission is finally giving her some real peace of mind. "Hey," Taylor calls as she paddles up alongside me, a little out of breath but smiling wide. "You're getting better, babe. That was almost not atrocious." Laughing, she slaps a handful of water at me. "Dick? Brat." She gets herself turned around so we're both facing the shore. "Your phone was ringing when I went back to our stuff for a drink. Screen said Devin." "Oh, nice. That's the guy from the nonprofit I was telling you about."
"Yeah? A call is a good sign, right?"
Taylor is returning to Boston in a few days, and I'm not heading back till mid-August, so we won't see each other for a while. Figured I'd better find something to keep me out of trouble for the month and a half we'll be apart. "I think so," I say. "Seems like if it was a no, they'd just send an email or something." After a bit of research, I found out there were some available summer internships with the local chapter of another environmental protection group. It's mostly a community outreach kind of thing, working booths at farmers markets and festivals, signing up volunteers. They're focused on clean oceans and beaches and educating the public about sustainable ways to enjoy marine recreation. After giving it a lot of thought over the last month, and having a lot of long talks with my super smart girlfriend, I've decided that's where my passion lies. This internship seemed like as good a step as any to figuring out how to make a career out of it. I know Taylor didn't mean the things she said on the Capilon when she dumped me, but she wasn't wrong. For the last few years, I haven't had a direction outside of hockey and just going along with the path Max had set out for me. I know he only wanted to help, but I'm not him. I can't follow in his footsteps. I needed to find my own path. And finally, I feel like I have a purpose, like I can be a man Taylor would be proud of.
"I got an email from Abigail's mom this morning," she says, dragging her fingers through the water as we bob on the tide. "Jules is pleading down to a lesser charge. I guess the prosecutor scared the shit out of her with some threat about felony hacking charges, but it sounds like Kevin's parents have hired some expensive bulldog lawyer to fight the case, so it might end up going to trial."
"Think you're up for that?" She's been so brave through this whole ordeal. I really hoped it could end quickly for her, but no, apparently that dickwad intends to make her suffer just so he can avoid taking responsibility. I keep telling myself bashing his face in would not help Taylor's side of things. It's a struggle.
"I'll have to be," she says. "Really, the more he pushes me, the more I want to get involved. Like this dude is going to wish he never fucked with me."
A grin tugs on my lips. That's my girl. Man, I couldn't be more impressed with how she's handled the pressure. Taylor's my fucking hero. With every new development in the case, she rises to the challenge, more committed now than ever to defy the people who wanted to bring her down. Every day, I'm falling more in love with her.
which only makes the knot in my stomach that much tighter. "So," I say, pausing as a swell tumbles beneath us. "You know Alec, Matt, and Gavin graduated, right? So since it was just going to be the two of us, Foster and I didn't bother renewing our lease on the house."
"Yeah, I still have a couple weeks before I need to decide if I'm keeping mine or looking for something else."
"Well, I was talking to Hunter, and it looks like he and Demi are thinking about their arrangements, too. Brenna and Summer are both leaving to live with their boyfriends, and Mike Hollis is married now, so... yeah." She raises an eyebrow at me. "Fuck, I didn't think this would be so hard." I gulp. "Anyway, I don't remember how we got on the topic, but someone mentioned, you know, maybe the four of us could, like, get a place."
"A place,"
she repeats, together.
"You're asking me to move in with you?"
"I mean, no, but yeah, sorta."
"Huh."
Taylor stares at me, unmoving, not even a lip twitch. It's sort of scary how still she is.
"But won't that be awkward for you and Demi?"
My eyebrows fly up. "What? No, not even a little. I mean, she kissed me once, but that was just to make Hunter jealous. There's no thing there."
"No," Taylor corrects deadpan. "I meant with all the super obvious sexual tension between me and Hunter. We've kept it quiet all this time, but..."
"Fuck off," I say, laughing and launching a splash at her. "You're such an asshole."
"I have to confess," she continues. "I've got the mega hots for your best friend. I mean, he's the captain after all."
I narrow my eyes. I'll break his legs in his sleep.
"You can watch if you want."
She flashes this self-impressed grin at me, and I can't help myself. I'm stupid for this girl. "Come here." I pull her board closer and kiss her, deeply and with purpose. "You're a pain in my ass."
"Love you too."
If someone had asked me to describe my perfect match, I wouldn't have been able to do it. I probably would have spit out a bunch of cliches that would have amounted to every one-night stand I've ever had. Yet somehow life put Taylor right in front of me anyway. She's made me a better person, taught me to be true to myself, helped me see the value in me as a person. Hell, she put my family back together. She and I found every possible way to try to sabotage our happiness, each of us falling back on old habits and insecurities. But what gives me faith in us is that we always managed to end up right back here, together. I guess there's hope for a couple of hopeless fuck-ups after all. "So, is that a yes?" I ask her. Taylor looks over her shoulder at the incoming swell. She lines up her board and prepares to catch it. Then, with a mischievous grin, she starts paddling.
"Race you for it."
This has been an Audible Studios production of The Dare. Briar U, Book 4. Written by L. Kennedy. Performed by Elizabeth Luis and Teddy Hamilton. Executive producers Rena Ayer and Mike Charzik. Producer Chris Sacco. Copyright 2020 by L. Kennedy. Sound recording copyright 2020 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.